You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm your host, Logan Medish of High Caliber History. And as always, I'm joined around the table by guys from Gunbroker and guys from Go Wild. So we have Alan and Dan. And our special guest today, we have John Knipe, who is the Director of Product Management at Magpul, which, you know.
You've probably heard of them.
You've probably heard of Magpul. They're this little company.
Starting to make some waves.
Yeah, making some waves. So, John, appreciate you being here.
Yeah, we actually make everything in a repurposed taco truck. It's a very small, very efficient operation.
But it's been beautifully restored. It's got a surfboard on the side. Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's a good taco truck, right? Yeah. So we really appreciate you being here. And, of course, everyone knows Magpul. You guys have changed the industry in so many ways. And so you're also celebrating a big anniversary this year.
It's 25th anniversary.
All the good companies turned 25 this year.
Yeah, so. Gunbroker's also 25 this year. So, yeah, but so you guys have a lot of things that you've done and a lot of interesting history, you know. Yeah.
I mean, you can't walk around any show and not bump into something. And the big selling feature is, you know, with Magpul Furniture, Magpul Magazines, Magpul whatever. So can you give us just from back when it was literally a Magpul up to today, kind of walk us through the explosion?
So our founder, Rich Fitzpatrick, most people that follow the AR-15 are probably familiar with Rich. He retired a few years ago, I think 2017. But Rich was a recon Marine in the early 90s. And if you guys have ever seen 100-mile-an-hour tape and 550 cord to pull your mag out of an LC2 pouch. Richard saw an opportunity. He was a software engineer at IBM in Boulder at the time. Like, you know, you could make a rubber loop that slid over the mag. It'd be easy to get it out of the pouches. They wouldn't bang together. Like, a really simple idea. And be able to retrieve them. You could hang the mags from them. Just a simple rubber loop stretched over the magazine, and you could pull it out of a pouch. And so Richard invested in the tooling and touch and go, you know, probably for a little while there. Like, that was a big investment then.
For a product that sold, what, a three-pack for like $12
originally? Yeah, three-pack for $9, $12. It's funny. We'll come full circle on the original Magpul here at the end. But started selling them, you know, out of his basement, card tables at gun shows, and more momentum. And Richard believed in that product, and, you know, eventually made one for, you know, M14 and SR25 mags, MP5 mags, and slowly gained enough momentum. And then Richard had an idea for a stock, which was the M93 stock.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find one with all the parts on it now, you'd be a rich guy. I don't even have
really
one. But
looking on Gunbroker right now.
Oh, no, I'm already eyeing my computer case over there and wishing I had it in front of me.
So Richard had an idea for a buttstock where you could adjust the length of pull. It was modular. You could change all kinds of parts on it. That thing had more parts than the gun it went on. And never existed in a 3D model. It's funny. I think he drew it in Illustrator in 2D from every perspective and took that to a tool maker like, I want to make this. How does this work?
Wow.
And made this really cool buttstock that, regardless of the length of pull, had the same cheek weld. It had a number of sling attachments. It had a number of butt pad options. The whole bottom you could bolt on. And the idea was he would make different bottoms for the stock for different purposes. And that eventually evolved into the UBR stock that we all know today. That was the kind of the lineage there. And that was the first stock that the Marine Corps Det 1. SOCOM Det 1, their test bed for the Marine Corps Special Operations, bought those stocks. And I wasn't around back then. I was in the Army and started with the company in 2012. So I'm doing all this from memory, but I'm kind of the resident historian now. But that And then he had an idea for the PRS stock, which really, it's on its third variant, and that really set the stage for the Precision AR. It was the first real purpose-built Precision stock that had those features. And those were kind of the first products, the Myad Grip. And then we got the CTR stock, which kind of changed everything. Yeah. And really, you got to give some credit to the expiration of the assault weapons ban. And what that did for the AR-15 market. Oh, yeah. The GWAT kicked off, and end of the assault weapons ban right there in that same 2 or 3 year period, and it was just
the
right
storm.
Right guy, the right idea at the right time. Richard found a phenomenal partner in Doug Smith, our president and CEO. He was employee number one, still runs the company to this day, kind of has run it all along. This is his 20th year, I believe. And then we had a designer, Mike Mayberry, who also retired, but is still involved in the company. And those three guys together kind of, we had a business guy, a designer, and a visionary, and they're the tripod of Magpul, and they're all still involved on various levels. Doug obviously still runs the company. And had the right combination of people and opportunities, and then the product portfolio just kind of took off. CTR stock, like how do we just make a better carbine stock?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Make it lock, make it fit any buffer tube. You know, we had the pinch lock on the front that would clamp onto any tube regardless of the tube spec. And you know, again, that's another thing we've carried forward into new stocks that we released, you know, a couple weeks ago. That concept of the CTR still holds up. So we had the CTR, and that obviously wildly popular. See it on the guns that were on the Bin Laden raid. You see it in Black Rifle Coffee's logo. You see it. Yeah, but if we look around, you'll see.
I mean,
it's everywhere.
It's literally iconic. Yeah. It's the definition of iconic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is the AR stock now. And they developed a new polymer for that. They were unable to do it with any of the formulations that were on the market. And then they'll probably correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Mike, the chief of design, was like, you know, this polymer, you could probably make a mag out of it.
Mike, jump in the comments and correct him if you need to. So.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we have happen a lot. Is, yeah. You know, people, you know, let me tell you something about you that you don't know. And we're like, cool, tell us, because, you know.
I get that a lot.
We have no shame. You know, if we're wrong, let's fix it, you know.
People walk up and they're like, you know what you guys should make? Yeah.
Right.
All right. So Mike thinks the polymer is good for mags.
He's like, you know, this has all the properties that you could turn this into a magazine. And of course, everybody is like, no, no, no. We're in thermal and Orlite. You know, you don't use polymer AR mags back then.
Right.
And I remember as an end user, very happy with my brand new Colt GI mags. And if I just didn't like a scratch on them, I'd throw it away and get another one.
You might change the follower, but otherwise, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, if I didn't like the look of one on a random day, I would just stomp it and go pick a new one up. And I remember like all these polymer magazines, and I'm like, ooh, man, we've tried that one before. Like, they're not great in an AUG. You don't have a choice. Everything else, you know, it's not a polymer mag world. That's not the world we live in. Metal mags are right mags.
Right.
So
the automobile is a passing fad.
Yeah. You know, Magpul pitched it. Yeah, podcast. I'm not gonna listen. So
the future is now, old man.
Those dudes are a lot smarter than me. That's why I work for them, not the other way around. Mm. And decided that a polymer magazine was something they wanted to pursue. And I remember generally not being super familiar with Magpul at the time. Like, I'd seen the PRS stock. I got issued one. Still got it for my SR25. And I'd seen the rubber loops. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay. But Magpul wasn't what they are now.
Yeah.
And the PMAG really, the PMAG and the CTR, the Myad Grip, kind of in that 3 to 5 year period really set them off on this trajectory. So, strange stroke of luck, my unit's force modernization guy had some polymer mags that Drake sent him. Drake's been at the company for 20 years also, maybe 20-year range. So everybody familiar with Magpul and the PMAG saw him running over it with his truck and the first live fire freezing out on a range in somebody's backyard that I pass every day on my way to work. And
historical marker coming soon.
Right, yeah.
So Drake sent some of the first run of PMAG. So I took the first ones overseas in 2007, about 30 days after they made them. So as far as know, those were the first PMAGs to deploy in the GWAT. Huh. And I had really good luck with them. They had a recall on the first ones. The spines would split. The colored mags were not great. I know I had a couple foliage ones that split. I'm like, well, you know, they feed really good. And if they do break, you know they broke. They cracked on the back.
And they're right. They're magazines. It's the disposable part of the gun.
It's a consumable. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, our guy was like, hey, man, you're the gun nut. I'm like, take these over. I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe somebody should just like shoot them here. We got ranges. We got to take them, see how they work in the dirt. I'm like, man, we got dirt here too.
Right.
So, full disclosure, I had a GI mag with a Ranger plate on it. Great product, by the way, and a Magpul follower in my gun. But I took the polymer mags and started shooting them and using them, and had really good luck with them. And so it's kind of a funny story. I never imagined I would be working here at that point. So, yeah, first got to take P-Mags over. And 2000, they all kind of run together. Pretty sure it was 2007.
That's
and
cool.
I've still got them untextured. One of them was on the P-Mag wall. So they come out with the second gen P-Mag with a better, you know, now they knew what to look for. Like, we've got the polymer formulation narrowed down. And that Gen 2 P-Mag was really where that thing came into its own, particularly the black one. So just for academics, like, there's a reason we only do black and MCT in the P-Mags. And it's just the optimal strength and performance is in those colors. That MCT color that we do for the DOD that you can buy commercially, it's actually a new dye process that doesn't break down the fibers. And it's challenging. It's like, mags are wizardry. It's a box with a spring in it. How hard could it be?
You know what? It amazes me, though, talking to gun designers and how they will tell you, for a semi, you design the magazine and then build a gun around it because it is such a failure point.
The right way to do it is figure out the cartridge you want. Make a new one, whatever. Put a mag around it and then put a gun around it. You really need to do it from the primer up. From the bullet up.
So your so your polymer blend, is that patented by Magpul?
Yeah, it's a proprietary blend. I mean, we use a number of different materials, dozens and dozens of different, depending on the purpose. So not all the magazines are the same, not all the accessories are the same. But yeah, generally our polymer formulas are monopolized by us and very, very, very close hold.
Are you guys also making springs and followers in-house too?
We, you know, some stuff is in-house, some stuff we just don't have the ability to make ourselves, you know, like we're not a spring company. There's a lot of people that are really good at that. We buy springs, but generally try to do as much in-house as possible.
Sure.
Yeah.
So how far after the Gen 2s did the windowed come along?
So the windowed P-Mag, actually, if you look at the earliest P-Mags, it was the same tool for windowed and non-windowed. So you'll see in the tool, a solid mag that it has the window in there. It's just filled in. The window was a very early feature. I mean, you had some really cool stuff. The ribs that were really easy to get traction on, a dedicated over-travel stop, which you don't have on a GI mag, which is really where mag damage comes from.
Yeah.
Slamming the mag in there, hitting the bottom of the bolt carrier, or thing.
And using your mag as a monopod, too. With an over-travel, you can do that.
Yeah. The easy to remove floor plate is a huge one. You can actually service the mag without bending tabs or ripping the front of the magazine off, all that stuff. They kind of looked at everything, which is still something we do today. The case program's a good example. Big empty whiteboard, what do we hate about cases?
Yeah.
Make a huge list and try to fix it all.
I mean, I think the Docket Grid is one of those things, kind of like the original Magpul and a few other things you've done, that it came out and you're all like, well,
oh, duh.
Why the hell? I mean, seriously, why didn't I think of this?
Right.
We do the same thing, even if we do think about it. Like, why don't we think of it sooner, man? We've been like sitting here. We ship 2,500 gun cases around the country a year, like complaining about the cases.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I love how much you guys have embraced your history and have done that for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, because one of the things I remember, I still have a picture of it on my phone. It was probably for you guys' 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
Was in the booth, and you have one of the big dies that makes the Magpul, you know. And I was like, how cool is that? You know, I mean, because it is two giant hunks of metal. And yet, like, you guys had you held on to that.
And that's only the insert. The actual tool is much bigger. That's just center part. So that is the original Magpul tool.
And that is so cool.
I think it plays into just Magpul's self-awareness in general. I think as far as companies go, you are one of the most self-aware as far as knowing where you are in the space, where you want to be in the space, and embracing it. you on one level, you guys are in a really serious company. You make seriously good stuff, and you take it seriously. But on the other hand, you guys are, I mean, you're fun. You're a lifestyle brand these days.
We try to have fun with it. Happy people work harder.
I mean, my background is out of the marketing advertising side. So, you know, things like the Magpul logo, which not a lot of people know is actually a Magpul, just kind of squeezed together. You know, without getting into the details, we had a number of clients come to us and want us to design, you know, a mark. And every one of them described it the same way. Oh, we want a Magpul. We want the Magpul mark.
Yeah.
Not the buck mark, mind you, but the Magpul mark. So a lot of our work was designed around that. You know, we were talking earlier that companies like Yeti or Black Rifle might not be as successful as they are if it wasn't for you guys kind of paving the way on the marketing side and showing how to have fun with this stuff. And, you know, it's like being cool. You're making a lifestyle brand without trying to.
Right.
And it's, you've permeated the floor of any show. You go to SHOT, you go to NRA, and it's, you guys are just there, and it's incredible to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, the 20th anniversary was an interesting one. We had all the gold flake Magpuls to give away in the booth, and especially at the NRA show, we knew dominance of the PMAG, especially in the AR space, is pretty,
mm-hmm.
pretty total at this point.
Yeah.
But people would come up. Be like, oh, Magpul, I love you guys. Like, what's this? Like, bro, where is the Magpul?
Right.
But yeah, we didn't know, you know, because the popularity of that product is largely gone with the advent of the PMAG that you can actually pull out of a pouch, and it's got Ranger plates for the floor plates.
Not everywhere. I happen to know at least one chest carrier that's filled with PMAGs with Magpuls on them still to this day.
Really?
But I think he's an older guy who, it's
you know, we don't need to name him.
It's one of the cool things about Magpul is you guys don't really dilute the brand. As far as some of these brands, once they get big, they're stamping their name on all sorts of products, dog bowls and steak knives.
Where the buck mark kind of didn't accomplish what the Magpul mark did.
Right.
Is, you know, when you can buy it as a steering wheel cover or women's lingerie or an air freshener.
Once the buck mark ended up as a tramp stamp,
we
crossed a border, you know. I don't think that's going to happen with the Magpul logo.
No, I think we're safe in that case.
So far, so good. we are not unique. We're not the only one, but certainly there's different ways to approach how you view your own company internally.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a product company. Product drives everything we do. It's the first and foremost. And you know, that makes it easy. Having employee number one, having the guy that's always run the company, mm-hmm. still run the company, having the founders both, you know, still being involved on some level, makes it a lot easier. We have a remarkably low turnover rate, and it's gotten harder as the company's grown. We have to be grown ups sometimes, but we fight that kind of however we can.
Sure.
I used to tell Drake my retirement plan was to wait for him to retire and then I could take his job.
Yeah.
But I don't think Drake's ever going to go anywhere. So that, I had to come up with a new plan after a while on that one. But and this, I think, is an offshoot of being a product first company. You also seem to really be you love to support your consumer. I'm thinking of things like Vermont and some of the other airlift programs you did when magazine bands came in. And Magpul, for absolutely no necessity whatsoever, you know, we came in and stood on State House steps and handed out PMAGs and just showed the support where, you know, a lot of other companies probably wouldn't have.
I just really don't like being told what to do. especially with stuff like that. You know, the move out of Colorado, you know, so we had the PMAG and then we had an explosion of product. The PMAG line grows exponentially. You know, we make more magazines than anybody by a very, very, very wide.
Oh yeah,
wide margin.
I'm sure.
And the success of that, again, we had a 20-year war going on. That was good for business. The expansion of the firearms industry in general was good for business. People get more interested in shooting. It becoming more accepted. Good for business.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that happened in Colorado, Richard loved Colorado and loved Boulder because Boulder used to be the place that you could go be whatever you wanted to mm-hmm. be, whether regardless of which side of an aisle you were on. And we took that attack on our livelihood in Colorado very seriously. We moved the bulk of the company to Wyoming and Texas, which has been, they've been wonderful to us. We've still got a small footprint in Colorado. We had people and infrastructure we couldn't abandon, but, you know, we're not paying them taxes anymore.
Right.
And, I forget the article, and I think it was Richard who was quoted. They were talking about the product, and he specifically mentioned that we stamp on our PMAGs made in Boulder, USA, to make sure that all the hippies in Boulder know we do this.
and that was the case at the time, and no longer because we don't.
Sure.
And, you know, the administration in Colorado at that time was very eager to keep us there and keep our tax dollars there,
but they were
not eager at all to let us conduct the business we conduct, which is supporting people's, you know, lawful right to own firearms. We are a very individual responsibility based company. Like that's what we believe in. Self-reliance, independence, and Colorado was not on board with that, so we took our money and our people elsewhere. Wyoming was very happy to have hundreds of jobs. Texas was very happy to have hundreds of jobs.
Well, and as far as gun-friendly states, I mean, Wyoming, it doesn't get any better than that.
Wyoming's everything friendly. Love Wyoming. Yeah. Well, just don't bother anybody else. You can do whatever you want.
That's right.
You know, 45 minutes down the road, you can pop into Fort Collins, hit Cooper Smith, whatever you want to do, but then get right back into freedom right away. It's a great place.
And, you know, I think it's interesting that the company, you know, with starting to make actual magazines, you know, it was let's get away from, you know, the metal mags and, you know, look at what we can do with the polymer, and that you guys have done so many different rifle mags and handgun mags and different things. But now it's 25 years of this awesome plastic fantastic, you know, polymer stuff. And I get an email the other day, ping, new product, Magpul's got a metal magazine. So how does it come full circle with Magpul doing metal magazines now?
There are just places where you can, so we've heard we're the polymer company, and I certainly understand why. And I've heard, like, you're the plastic mag company, you're the PMAG company. Certainly understand why, because you can't get away from either one of those things from Magpul.
Sure.
Internally, we look at ourselves as an innovation company. We don't care if it's machine, cast, MEM, press metal, we would like to pick the best mode to do something, and that's not always polymer. There are plenty of guns where you can't get the requisite wall thickness to make a strong polymer mag. Like 1911, you're never going to see a 45 ACP polymer 1911 mag that goes into a GI gun without some huge
crazy
leap forward in polymer technology that we don't see on the horizon. And the SIG 320 was a good example where just a polymer is not the right material for the constriction and the way the mags are retained and everything. But we still saw opportunities to make a metal mag. So we want to make the best product. We don't really care how we want to make the best product the best way. But it's not like, well, if we can't mold it, we're not going to do it. If we see room for improvement and an opportunity there, we're going to take it, whether it's machine, stamp, cast, molded, you name
right.
it.
And so many companies don't do that. There's been some handgun companies that were late to the striker game because we're a hammer-fired gun company. We're only going to make hammer-fired guns.
Right.
And eventually they had to come out with a striker because that's just what the market demanded. You guys never put yourself in that box. It's like, you know, we make buttstocks. Why would we want to even get into magazines?
Yeah.
Well, then you'd make the best damn magazine out there. All right, we make rifle mags. Why would we want to try and make Glock mags? Well, because you can. It seems like every time, DACA cases, where the hell did the little bags come from?
Yeah.
Well, they're really good.
Yeah, they
so
are.
It's like whatever you guys put your sights on, you tend to do pretty good on.
And actual sights. Put your sights on. Yeah. You know, I've got EMBA sights on my rifles.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know?
You know, the sights and the bipod, those are really two product lines that change that entire platform. There was no way a company could sell you a gun with a free float handguard because they couldn't afford to put sights on it. You know, when you were Troy, great sights, again, iconic flip up sights, like the Troy backup sights were really the first.
They were the standard.
And still great sights. But, you know, nobody's going to sell you a $700 gun with $300 worth of sights on it. And again, that idea that, like, why don't we make a flip-up site that's true, like Mo, Magpul Original Equipment, you know, that's what Mo stands for, that, like, is an OEM-level opportunity for people to have fully featured sites that are generally stronger than the metal sites they're replacing in almost every way. I mean, it's hard to break those things. It's just tough material. They're sprung. The adjustments are very consistent. Everything about that, the only thing you're giving up with the original Embus was size, because the polymer is bigger than steel,
sure,
right? To get the requisite thickness or get the requisite strength.
Yeah.
So, And then with the M-Bus 3, you're really not giving that up. The sights are less than a quarter inch tall when they're folded. So that really changed the nature of iron sights on AR-15s, and it hasn't really shifted since then.
It really seems to have been a tipping point as well, because I'm tough on stuff. I mean, I break everything. And by the time the M-Bus sights come out, it never occurred to me to question it because, oh, they're made of polymer. They can't be that good. Because by then, you had established yourselves as this bomb-proof polymer company already. I never once hesitated to slap, like I said, a set of M-Bus sights on almost everything that has backup sights.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it had the logo. I trusted it.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, we still get, you know, I'll never use plastic mags. Okay.
You know.
Same thing with those polymer sights. That's one where people are like, oh, you'll melt them. Your gun can't work hot enough to melt the polymer on it, except maybe on the gas block. You know, that's why we say do not put them on a Pickerel gas block. Other than that, those things to impact, I mean, they're so strong. They're so tough. They are absolutely stronger than most metal sights.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have, it's not like you're subject matter experts in what you do or anything, you know, you're just this little fly by night company that's experimenting with plastic, you know,
and you know, to a degree, when
Colorado hippies, you know,
when a lot of these iconic products came out, they were fly by night's not the right word, but it is not the resources we have today. They did all of that, you know, where the success of some of these wild ideas that nobody thought, like, that's dumb, don't do that. You know, it's what everybody would have told them if they took a poll. They did it anyway. And it was make or break back then.
Sure.
Well, I was just curious to kind of, you know, as I've said, you can't walk a gun shop anywhere without seeing Magpul. So I hit on a gun broker and went and just selected just the firearms category, just the long gun category, and searched for the word Magpul. And I maxed our search out, which for the tool I was using, maxes out at 10,000 hits.
Wow.
So I can't tell you how many products are listed on GunBroker that, and this is just as a call out, you know, as a feature call out, that are specifying we have something from Magpul on this gun as a selling point that you should want to buy this gun.
And that's just on the rifles.
Just on the rifles.
Wow.
Yeah, we're not talking 1911 stocks. We're not talking Glock mags. We're not talking DACA cases. We're not talking, we're just Magpul furniture and probably, I can't imagine they're calling out a magazine, so that's got to be furniture.
Right.
Bipods.
10,000 you said was the cap?
10,000 hits, so I can't tell you. I'd have to pull in our data crew to dive deep in the database to get you a hard number.
So you're saying Magpul broke the system.
They literally broke the system.
Outstanding.
So that's about as useful as just searching for gun. As far as the accuracy of your search, like, you're going to have to narrow that down a little bit more.
Yeah, I think what I'm saying is that Magpul is ubiquitous as gun. Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah,
they're
absolutely
everywhere.
They are everywhere. And we appreciate you guys being everywhere. We also appreciate that the everywhere that you are includes being right here on the No Low Ballers podcast.
Absolutely.
So, John, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come join us today. Mm-hmm. You know, congratulations, you guys, on 25 years. Yeah. Can't wait to see what the next 25 are going to bring, because
it's shocking because it seems like they just started, but they also seem like they've been around forever. Just a stalwart foundational piece of our industry. So it 25 seems like a weird number to me.
Yep. Well, we'll see you again for 30 and 35.
I'm just going to keep on adding those stickers to my laptop every.
We'll keep making them. Well, when you figure out how many guns don't have Magpul on GunBroker, let me know.
There
we'll make something for them too.
There you
it's
go.
Like, we're not quite there yet.
I like it. Awesome. Well, thanks, John. We really appreciate you coming in and joining us on the No Low Ballers podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. We appreciate all of you tuning in on all of the various platforms. We really appreciate you joining us for this ride each and every week. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite platform. You can find us all of the videos on YouTube and all of your favorite podcasting platforms. Listen and make sure you're subscribed there. Leave us some likes and comments. We do read the comments. We do respond to them. We just really appreciate you guys tuning into the show each and every week, because without you, there is no us. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. That is it for this week, and we will see you right here next week on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.